Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Oh my gosh, how much fun was that? How much fun was that? If you missed it, please go back and find it on podcast. It will be the bonus hour today. Uncle Bully's Surf School. He is this warm, soft, beautiful light of a human being.
You looked like you were in heaven when you guys hugged before they left.
I said to Sam, that's like an Oprah hug. It really felt better than what I feel like Oprah would feel like when you hugged her.
And you've never hugged Oprah, right?
No.
Well, now
I'm good.
Now you don't have to.
I'm telling you, this was better. You know when you meet people that just have the most beautiful energy? And you know who else was like that when I met them, Sam?
Me, of course.
Yes.
I mean,
no. Scott's buddy that plays in the band. Why can't I think of his name? And he doesn't wear shoes and he sings happy songs and they come in here every once in a while.
Michael Franti?
Michael Franti.
Yeah.
When I hugged Michael Franti, that's the closest I've ever come to feeling that like light.
Yeah, it's a very peaceful energy.
Around somebody.
And you
do not have that. I'm
have
more
very chaotic energy.
Right. I'm sure Bully's like, get away from me. Do not rub that into my light.
Who is this bolt of lightning? And why is she here?
Get your tornado away from my soft glowing light. Lady, 7:30 Glenwood Arts tomorrow night. Please go support Uncle Bully's Surf School. You will be helping my dear friends, Todd, Ashley Bully and his wife, Leah, but you will also be helping Hawaii. And let's not pretend like we haven't all, I don't want to say forgotten what happened in Hawaii, but oh, man, a lot of people here on the mainland have
it
forgotten.
Definitely fell out of the news cycle very quickly.
He was saying even right after the devastating hurricane and the wildfires, there was a flood, I think, in India a couple of weeks later, like a devastating flood, in Turkey, that just wiped that news cycle right on to the next thing.
It wasn't really covered what the aftermath would look like. It was kind of a, okay, well, now they're going to rebuild.
Yep.
Let them figure it out. What's next? Kind of a thing.
Yep.
I know. They're still struggling with it.
Can we talk just for a little bit about Caitlin Clark? Because you know how angry I was about that whole thing yesterday. Where to begin? There is an apology today from the sports writer, who, by the way, is in his 50s. I don't know why that makes me more mad, because if anyone had done this to her, it would have made me mad. But the fact that a long-time career sports writer treated her the way he did during that news conference infuriates me. We're going to play it, and then I'm going to play his, do we call this an apology? I don't like it. Sam, I don't like it. I don't like it. But when you have it, tell me and we'll play.
I will. Sorry, I was ill prepared.
The exchange. His name is Greg Doyle.
D-O-Y-E-L.
Yep.
Uncommon spelling.
And I said on the program yesterday he would be fired by today. To my knowledge, that has not happened.
He has not been fired. That is correct.
No. So new video has surfaced. Listen to this from the New York Post. Of him being awkward in a second exchange during Caitlin Clark's introductory Indiana Fever press conference after he was called out for his cringeworthy comments. You were just given the keys to that, he said to Indiana Fever coach Christy Sides, referring to Clark as that.
Hi. Caitlin, Greg Doyle, Indy Star. Real quick, let me do this.
You like that?
He's making
like
the heart shape.
Here. I like that you're here.
I do that at my family after every game, so.
Okay, well, let's start doing it to me and we'll be get along just fine. So, question is.
Okay, so hang on 1 second, Sam. At the beginning of the news conference, it's the second question asked at her inaugural news conference with the Indiana Fever. Greg Doyle shows the heart symbol, the one that Taylor Swift uses, the one that Caitlin Clark uses after each game that, you know, she shows the little heart to her family.
I mean, the one that basically anybody uses.
He starts out with that heart.
Yeah. And he wants her to do that heart sign up for the camera.
Play it one more time.
Hi. Caitlin, Greg Doyle, Indy Star. Real quick, let me do this.
You like that?
I like that you're here. That you're here.
I do that at my family after every game, so.
Okay, well, let's start doing it to me and we'll be get along just fine. So.
I don't have words.
So anyway, now to my question, because I am a reporter.
Doyle is a father of two and was named in the top 250 most influential people in Indiana by the Indianapolis Business Journal in 2023. His age makes it worse. If a 25-year-old green, just credentialed journalist had said that to her, there would be outrage. I don't think it would be the outrage that we're seeing. And then again, later in the news conference, he says to the coach, "You were just given the keys to that. What are you going to do with it?" Referring to Clark as that.
Now, the outrage seems to be 50-50 here. Maybe not 50-50, but I'm seeing arguments on both sides of the line.
Why?
Saying this is absolutely a fireable offense. That was creepy as blank. And then the other side saying, having outrage about the outrage, saying, why are you guys freaking out so much? This is just a reporter, you know, building rapport with Caitlin Clark.
No, not at all. And in fact, fellow reporters have come out and said this is cringeworthy. His credentials should be revoked. I'm going to read some of his. He apologizes to her, if we call it that, in a column. So I kind of feel like the apology now, he just wants clicks, right? Because now he is the news story, which is not something you want to be when you're a sports journalist.
I mean, his job is to draw attention.
Here is the Greg Doyle column apology. Caitlin Clark, I am so sorry. On Wednesday, I was part of the problem. He writes, I am devastated to realize I'm part of the problem. I screwed up Wednesday during my first interaction with number one overall draft pick Caitlin Clark of the Indiana Fever. What happened was the most me thing ever in one way. I'm sort of known locally, he says, sigh, for having awkward conversations with people before asking brashly conversational questions. I've done it for years with various coaches and players that he names. Do you notice something about those names, he writes? They're all men. On the one hand, yes, absolutely, male and female athletes should be treated the same. I'm talking about coverage, he says, respect, compensation, terminology, you name it. Stories have been written about idiots who say or act otherwise. And then along comes a story about another insensitive man, which goes viral on social media, and I decided to write about that idiot, he writes, me. What I've learned is I need to be more aware about how I talk to people and not just athletes. I realized that only after my exchange with Clark went viral and I navigated the first two stages of grief during a discussion with the people I care about most. First, he said it was denial. I didn't do anything wrong. I gave Caitlin her signature heart-shaped hand gesture as a way of introducing myself. What kind of idiot acts creepy on national television? Then he says I had anger. This is how I talk to everyone. Had the person up there been a male, I would have done the same thing since I've been here. The closest thing Indianapolis has had is Colts quarterback Anthony Richardson. I would have shown him the heart and reiterated, I like that you're here. He writes, this is where I was, convinced I was harmless and right when a woman I deeply respect told me, quote, but Caitlin Clark is a young woman and you don't talk to a young woman the same way as you would a young man. He writes, my heart dropped because now I saw it. After years of being so sure I was on the right side of these arguments, I was now on the wrong side. And for the oldest reason known to man and woman, ignorance. He ends it by saying, Caitlin Clark, I am so sorry.
Was he trying too hard in the apology?
Doesn't feel like an apology. It doesn't.
Well, I mean, the apology's never really an apology.
He didn't write about her. He wrote about himself.
Now, there's an argument being made on the text line that it was just a bad attempt at being funny, which I could understand. But you also have to be aware of your tone.
His role isn't to be funny.
I would agree with you.
He's a sports writer.
You also have to be aware of your tone because that here, I like that you're here, it's pretty creepy sounding.
It's something.
And yes, if maybe that's your signature, that you build rapport with new athletes by asking an off-the-cuff question.
Do that heart to me and we'll get along just fine.
Let's not make it that one. You would never say
that to a man. 913-586-7798. When we get back, let's get into this for a little bit this hour. The Supreme Court, starting on Monday, is going to look at a case regarding states' rights versus the rights of unhoused individuals on sidewalks, in parks,
under bridges.
And while the case really centers around California's homeless problem, the state of Missouri is mentioned, and for a good reason. We'll break that down straight ahead on Dana and Parks. All right. The sides are lining up in the monumental Supreme Court case on homelessness that involves California, but is also going to have an impact really for all of the towns struggling with this issue, okay? I think the case starts on Monday, if I'm not mistaken. The United States Supreme Court is about to hear the biggest case about homelessness in decades. And it seems like everyone right now in California has an opinion. At issue, whether and under what conditions cities can fine or arrest people for camping in public spaces. It is a ruling that will obviously have nationwide implications for how Lawrence handles this, how Kansas City handles this. Scott has often said that there is no solution to the homelessness problem. I don't know that I agree with that or I will go that far.
No, I would agree with that.
But this case is mammoth for so many reasons. And one of them is if the court decides cities have the right to kick out, fine, or boot someone from a tent on a public space, where does that leave us? Where do the homeless people go? And then if they decide cities or towns do not have the right to boot you from an encampment,
there's going to be encampments popping up under every single
bridge. That is absolutely right. So the case is Johnson versus Grants Pass. And it stems from a 2018 lawsuit challenging an ordinance approved by a small city in southern Oregon that essentially made it illegal for homeless residents to camp on all public property throughout the city. All public property. Oral arguments start Monday to determine if that ordinance violates the Eighth Amendment's ban on cruel and unusual punishment to penalize someone for camping if they have nowhere else to go. This is interesting. Does it violate the Eighth Amendment's ban on cruel and unusual punishment?
What?
To penalize someone for camping if they have nowhere to go. That is the argument they are using.
I think the counter argument would be they most certainly have somewhere to go.
According to the National Homelessness Law Center, that is a thing. Quote, this is the most important Supreme Court case about homelessness in at least 40 years, and the results will be tremendous. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, by the way, already has ruled in the case and in a prior case, which was Martin versus Boise. This is the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that cities cannot punish someone for camping if that person has no shelter. Grants Pass then turned around and said, hey, we want the Supreme Court to rule on this and overturn both prior rulings. Since the Ninth Circuit Court first weighed in, numerous California cities have been sued over their efforts to remove homeless camps. Judges have delayed or halted efforts in several places because they need a direction. They need a direction from the Supreme Court.
The state of California recently had to pay, I don't even know how many thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, to rebuild a bridge over an I-10 bridge, one of the busiest highways through L.A., because an encampment underneath it caught fire and damaged the bridge.
Okay, those on the side of pro-enforcement, kicking people out, okay, say that courts have made it impossible for cities to lessen the harm that encampments are doing to neighborhoods. They also argue that the prior rulings, which they want overturned, are confusing and too hard to follow. California State Sheriff's Association and California's Police Chiefs Association say local governments now have little or no power to enforce rules when it comes to homeless residents, leading, quote, to an explosion of encampments throughout the state.
And as a city is a business, they would say, what about the economic impact? Our businesses within our business, because cities are businesses, not to repeat myself, is being hurt because they won't enter this business because of what is set up outside of it.
Okay, so listen to this. The DA in San Diego County, they says this. They recently passed an ordinance banning homeless encampments near schools, shelters, transit hubs, and in parks if shelter is available on public sidewalks. The recent Ninth Circuit rulings, quote, create uncertainty about the validity of that ordinance as a whole. 913-586-7798.
Why can't they be by schools?
What do you think? How do you think the court will rule? And where does cruel and unusual punishment fit into this discussion?
That's an interesting caveat.
Super interesting that's the direction they're going with this. 913-586-7798. We got one line open if you want it. We'll take your calls and text straight ahead on Dana and Parks.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
All right, come on in. 913-586-7798. They are calling this the single most important court ruling when it comes to the homeless crisis in more than 40 years, with cities saying we need clarification. Do we have the right to ban or remove encampments, basically tent encampments from city property, parks, under bridges.
And city property or state property?
Either. They're using the argument that it's cruel and unusual punishment to remove someone from a tent housing community if there's no place else to go.
Define no place else to go.
Well, that gets thorny, doesn't it? Let's go to Mike in Topeka. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
So my question is, if they decide that cities and states are not allowed to fine people for camping on public property,
right,
are they also going to make it free for campers at public parks? Like, every Father's Day weekend, we take the whole family out to Pomona Lake. We go out camping.
Uh-huh.
And it costs us $40 a night. One could argue that we're being fined $40 every night to go camping. So are they going to make that free too?
Oh, man, Mike.
Because that's public property. That's
yes, and camping is a business. Camping is a business. I remember, like, if you go to Perry Lake, you probably have to have, like, an ID tag. You've got to register to take your pop-up mm-hmm. tent in there. It's probably, like, $40.
It's not cheap. To build on to Mike's point, there are many, many, many national parks that have gates around them. You can only go through manned entrances to get into those national parks. Do you know what happens at those manned entrances? You pay upwards of $50 to just drive around in them.
I want to tell you this, too. This is not... It is a political issue, and it's not. Here's why. Two of California's state senators, a Republican and a Democrat, have joined forces to propose a statewide version of San Diego's ordinance, which allows police to toss homeless people out of encampments, even when shelter is unavailable. But advocates for homeless people say that enforcement strategy has merely chased the homeless onto riverbanks and other places. It's whack-a-mole, right? As the number of shelter beds still fails to meet demand. Let's go to Candace in Mission, who used to live in Seattle. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy is right. So, you know, I just know from my experience out there, when I left in 2019, there had been upwards of $1 billion spent by various governmental organizations, the homeless advocacy groups, which have become a business, by the way. So it is kind of in their interest to some degree for status quo to remain. And I don't know if this is well known, but in Los Angeles, I think it was either last year or the year before, due to the amount of human waste on the streets, there were documented cases of plague in Los Angeles. So just from a public health perspective, which we all now should be very familiar with public health situations, this really cannot remain. And I think that some of the advocacy groups, not all of them certainly, and I've been involved with some myself, the best advocacy groups are the ones who are out there putting people on a pathway to get out of the situation versus just trying to make their lives easier remaining in the situation they're in.
Candace, I know the numbers that you cite. We've talked about them on the program before. Thank you for the great call. I believe they spent in Seattle upwards of $100,000 per man, woman, and homeless child to try and fix the problem, and it's only worse.
Oh, they've dumped billions and billions of dollars into this effort.
Someone did the math, and I'm pretty sure we've cited it on this program before. It's $100,000 per man, woman, and child.
Nothing has changed, though, because the change has to happen on an individual basis. You can't throw money at a problem.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Let's go to Jess in Harrisonville. Hi, Jess. Go ahead.
Hi. I don't know if anyone's ever been to Colorado Springs, but they are everywhere, sidewalks, parking lot. And I was going to also say, if they are on sidewalks, how is that sanitary for people walking down the street, even with young children? So how can that continue to be if we're coming right out of COVID?
I think the argument you make, Jess, about the encompassing entire parking lots is a stronger argument than COVID.
Ooh.
If you are taking over in an encampment an entire parking lot, I feel like it would be okay to say as a city you're not allowed to do that.
Interesting point that just came to my mind. If I were to fall on hard times and I was unable to afford my apartment and I decided that I was going to live out of my truck, if I parked my truck in the same spot on any street in the metro for more than 48 hours...
You could be towed.
I would be towed.
Is that in violation of your Eighth Amendment right? Against cruel and unusual punishment.
City code says I can't park there for more than 48 hours without moving it.
Let's go to Carmel in North Kansas City. Thank you so much for calling in, because I think you're going to give us a wealth of understanding and information here. Hi.
Absolutely. And it's Carmel.
Oh, Carmel. Pardon me.
It's okay. I'm a case manager, and I work with homeless community. I work with the Missouri and Kansas City, Kansas homeless community. It starts with the city.
if the city is seeing a problem with the homeless community, they need to get shelters up and running. They need to fund a shelter. They need to fund a transitional house. And if they can't fund it, they need to partner with the transitional houses and make sure that these people are aware of their options, because they're not. And it's hard to get into transition homes or get a case manager or any kind of assistance when you have no identification. And many of these people don't have identification. And it's hard to get those when you don't have the money to get the identification. So it's a lot, and it's not just one thing. I think this bill is going to be very bad because they're not going to have anywhere to go. People are complaining that they're on the sidewalks, they're in the parking, they're in the cars, they're everywhere. The shelters are full. It's obvious that they need more shelters. I can tell you alone that Missouri, North Kansas City area does not have a lot of shelters. We have maybe four, and that's it. And going further north, like Platte City, there's nothing. So, and I can tell you in Kansas City, Overland Park, Olathe, you go further out, there's going to be nothing further out. And there's not a lot of men's transitional houses either. So it's going less and less and less. So it starts with the city, and then you can get counties involved too in it. But if they're going to have this bill, they need to make sure that there's somewhere for them to go and not just another park or another camping site.
Let me ask you this, because I agree with you. You're just moving them from point A to point B at that point. Yeah. It is whack-a-mole. But why? And it's sort of like the drug crisis problem. A drug addict is not going to be forced to get help. They can't get help until they want the help. And I think it's something a little similar in some of the homeless population that has said, I don't want help. I don't want to go to a shelter. This is my life. There is that percentage out there that just does not want services. So, So how do you help the people that don't want help?
So the individuals that I'm seeing, because I've been in this for 10 years, the individuals that I'm seeing that don't want help already have an income. So they're getting hotel rooms. They're making their way. Like it's really nice outside, right? So we're seeing them a lot. But when in the winter, when you see it's really cold, they're getting hotel rooms. They're getting in housing and things like that. So I think the more chances that they have, or they connect with somebody, they find help. That's where case management comes into place. They need a case manager, someone who can really talk to them and have patience with them. That mental health crisis, that has a lot to do with it. If you come to me and tell me that I need to find somewhere to live and I'm getting an income of $1,300 a month, and I'm looking at like, why? It's the mental health. They need that treated as well. So you kind of have to attack it all at once, just so they can make sure that they're getting that support and they have a place to live.
And you have seen this work, I'm guessing, or you would not continue to do the work that you do every single day.
This year alone in the job that I have right now, I have housed 37 people.
37
homeless men. Yes. So it's hard, but it's possible, and you just have to find patience with them. But they all need a case manager to start with. They can't just do it alone. They need somebody to help them who is trained to help them. And here in Missouri and Kansas, I think we have a lot going on with the homeless community. And I know in LA they do. They just need more of it. They need more help. They need more shelters. Because if they pass this bill, they're going to need a plan on where these people are going to go, because it's just going to keep building. And then you're right, Scott, they're going to see them at the campsite.
Yeah.
Because they can't afford $40 to $50. They're out there. Some of them are working homeless. So there are people who go to work and they're homeless.
So thank you so much for the call and the work that you do. Truly. It takes a very special person to be a case manager and not feel like you're banging your head against the wall. And look for the positives where you can find them amidst such an enormous, enormous problem.
And they're tough to find.
913-586-7798. Man, the board has just lit up with this one. Oral arguments in the case start in front of the Supreme Court on Monday. We'll be right back with more on Dana and Parks. We're going to try to get everybody in here for our discussion about the Supreme Court case on Monday. as they take a look at whether or not it is cruel and unusual punishment to have law enforcement basically clear out homeless encampments on public property. 913-586-7798. Who's been waiting the longest? Let's go to Mike in Kansas City. Mike, go ahead. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing? Hey, nice to be on the show. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Go ahead.
I just wanted to reiterate to the gentleman's comment earlier when he said that could be towed off the street after parking in your public on a public street, being in your car for over 48 hours. Yes, sir. First, I want to say that, you know, I really have my heart goes out to all the people that are homeless. And I used to be on a board of directors for one of the local programs in Kansas City several years back, and I've been through homelessness. So, you know, it hurts to say this, but yesterday, my daughter, she's 15. We have an abandoned house across the street where several people camp out in their cars and behind the house over there. And I live in Northeast, so it's not the best neighborhood. So I'm very aware of the homeless situation around here, and it's pretty bad. But I have a couple of them that have been recently parking right in front of my house, literally up on the curb.
Oh.
And it's my daughter has to, I leave for work very early in the morning, so she leaves after I do, and she has to deal with these people every day, and it's very scary to me. But so I unfortunately called the police just to see what was available or what could happen, and they told me, they called me back about 1 o'clock last night and told me that there was really nothing that they could ask them to leave. But they were on a public street as long as their license plates were up to par.
And Mike, thank you for the call. We got a lot of people who want to get in. That's why police agencies, all of the law enforcement agencies are saying to the Supreme Court, you have to clarify this. What are we allowed to do? Let's go to Kelly in Overland Park. Hi, Kelly.
Hey, I'll try to be quick. Sunday morning news story, I caught something about Houston, Texas. They have a great new program that I think our city should look at. The city really needs to have a plan in place that doesn't feel like we do at all. And you have to have solutions. In Houston, they implemented an umbrella where they put all resources under one umbrella. And that has helped caseworkers and whatnot communicate with each other.
Yep.
And then they took pandemic money and bought a bunch of apartments.
Bingo. Pandemic money for apartments. And then Sam's head pops up because I know what you're going to say.
What happens when the money runs out?
What happens when the money runs out? I thought you were going to say that you pay for your apartment.
Oh, yeah, I do pay for my apartment.
Diane in Overland Park, wrap us up. Hi, Diane.
Oh, thanks, Dana. I'm just going to say, you know, all these people, bless their hearts, they're coming out of the woodwork, and I think we have five different, you know, people with situations. Some people just choose not to work. Some people need help and are willing to go into, be taken into a building and, you know, check for their health and given their shots and help trying to find a job. But I think if you're going to sit on the street holding a sign, the difficulty is that not all of those people are by choice homeless.
Diane, we got to cut you off. I'm so sorry. Thank you for the call. Up against a break. Caitlin Clark, reporting from The Athletic right now, has signed a shoe deal with Nike worth more than $20 million. Adidas and Under Armour were among the finalists. Caitlin Clark chose Nike.
Well, that's $74,000 a year. Just went way up.
Boom! Good for you, girl. Back with much more on Dana and Parks straight ahead.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.